big news. Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
By the time the decade turned, Mark Zuckerberg was just a tech CEO. Presently, he was a geopolitical force. Heads of state, lawgivers, and controllers spoke about him in the same breath as chairpersons and high ministers. His company had come an unnoticeable government of feathers, governing speech, sequestration, and indeed republic itself. And for the first time, he began to feel the real cost of power. The story of Facebook's political awakening didn't start in Washington. It started in the murk of its own success. The same platform that connected billions had also become a tool for misinformation, propaganda, and manipulation. Every election, every social movement, every kick now played out on Facebook's stage. It was erected to handle that kind of responsibility. But it couldn't walk down moreover. After the 2016 U.S. election and the Cambridge Analytica reproach, Facebook had come the symbol of everything dangerous about big tech private data misused for political targeting. Algorithms indicted of radicalizing people. Governments calling for regulation. Mark had witnessed before Congress several times, each hearing a ritual of blameworthiness and defense. He was naturally political. Mark's instinct was to make systems, not debate testament. But the more important Facebook came, the less he could stay in the background. The world demanded a champion king. He was just a mastermind. So he acclimated. Behind unrestricted doors, Mark girdled himself with experts, former diplomats, policy stagers, social scientists. He erected a small internal think tank, Facebook's policy and integrity team, led by people who'd formerly worked in government. Their job was to vend advertisements. It was to keep the platform from collapsing under the weight of misinformation to test speech and manipulation. Every day, they made choices that felt more like moral judgments than product design. What counts as hate speech? What's free expression? When does a post come incitement? Mark had final say on the hardest calls, and every one of them left a mark. He knew that whatever Facebook decided would be quoted, blamed, and deconstructed by the media within hours. Meanwhile, governments around the world began pushing back. In Europe, new data protection laws forced Facebook to reevaluate how it handles stoner information. In India and Brazil, political leaders indicted the platform of suppression when their content was removed. In Myanmar, Facebook was criticized for enabling violence by failing to control hate content. The company that formerly promised connection had come aglass for the world's divisions. Mark began to see that Facebook's scale made impartiality insolvable. Staying out of politics was, in itself, a political act. The company couldn't live without shaping the public discussion, and he had to decide what kind of world that discussion would produce. The pressure grew heavier after the 2020 U.S. election. Intimation about voting, fraud, and vaccines swamped the platform. Mark pushed his brigade's act briskly, flagged false claims, limit the spread of rumors, and remove dangerous content. But no matter what they did, someone was furious. To rightists, Facebook was laundering free speech. To liberals, it was doing enough to stop falsehoods. He couldn't win. When the January 6th Capitol attack happened, the shock hit him tete-a-tete. Facebook, like Twitter and YouTube, had been used to organize the chaos. For a man who formerly believed his platform could make republics stronger, it felt like treason. Within days, Facebook suspended also President Donald Trump's account, one of the most controversial opinions in tech history. Mark didn't make it smoothly. He spent hours on videotape calls with counsels, attorneys, and the company's independent oversight board, which worked like a digital Supreme Court. The decision was then about politics. He told his platoon it was about safety. But the counterreaction was brutal. For months subsequently, he lived under a microscope. Every post, every public statement was parsed for bias. He abominated the limelight, but understood it was part of the job now. We erect a commodity people depend on, he said intimately. That means we've earned that trust every single day. outside the courtroom of public opinion, Facebook was fighting another war antitrust suits. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission indicted the company of crushing competition through accessions of Instagram and WhatsApp. Lawgivers talked openly about breaking the company piecemeal. Mark stayed calm, as he always did under fire. He believed the data were on his side, and he wasn't about to let controllers strike what he directed. Still, he couldn't ignore what the moment represented. The golden age of limited tech was over. Governments wanted control. Society wanted responsibility. And the Sprat who formerly said, move presto and break effects, now had to move precisely and fix what had been broken. By 2021, Facebook's internal culture had changed dramatically. There were smaller taglines about dislocation and further about responsibility. We connect people, the bills read, but we cover them too. Mark, once the scrappy author rendering through the night, had come a statesman to navigating moral Argentine zones. He started spending further time reflecting than replying. He began reading Gospel, Kant, Rawls, indeed ancient Stoics. He was searching for fabrics, not just answers. What's verity when billions of people interpret else? What does fairness look like in an algorithm? That soul-searching didn't mean wimpiness. Mark remained fiercely competitive, but it gave him depth, a recognition that power, formerly achieved, is not about dominance but stewardship. He didn't seek admiration presently. He sought understanding. When asked in an interview what he'd learned from the last decade, he broke before answering, connection without responsibility is no connection at all. We've to earn the right to connect people. It was a quiet admission from a man who'd spent his life defending his creation. The storm that followed the Cambridge Analytica exposures didn't just shake Facebook. It tore through the entire foundation of Silicon Valley. What began as a news story in early 2018 snappily came a global reckoning. Millions of druggies discovered their particular data had been gathered and used to manipulate political opinions. For the first time, Facebook's pledge of connection felt like a trouble. Mark Zuckerberg had survived contestation before, but this was different. It wasn't a rendering error or a product misstep. It was about trust. The reproach verified what critics had long suspected, that Facebook's power was not just social. It was cerebral. The company didn't just connect people, it shaped what they saw, what they believed, and, in some cases, how they suggested. Inside headquarters, fear collided with denial. Masterminds dug into databases, policy brigades climbed to assess the damage, and public relations went into overdrive. Mark stayed composed, but those close to him saw the weight he carried. He wasn't just guarding the company. He was defending the moral core of what he'd erected. When he eventually appeared before the U.S. Congress in April 2018, the world watched. Rows of cameras, flashing lights, and legislators clinging cue cards filled the hail room. Dressed in a simple suit, Mark looked more like a pupil defending a thesis than the CEO of a multi-billion bone conglomerate. He apologized for the company's failures, but claimed that Facebook could fix itself. Facebook is responsible for the content on its platform, he said forcefully. And we didn't take a broad enough view of that responsibility. That was a big mistake, and it was my mistake. The sounds came artistic moment. Memes of legislators misreading technology swamped the internet. But beneath the humor was commodity deeper, a consummation that the digital world had outgrown the systems meant to govern it. Facebook was then just a company. It was structure. Back in Menlo Park, Mark moved snappily. He launched a full-scale data protection overhaul, Tense Inventor Access, and introduced new translucency tools. He pushes brigades to bed sequestration by design into every product. For someone formerly indicted of moving presto and breaking effects, it was a deliberate, humbling shift. Still, public trust didn't rebound overnight. Druggies were angry, governments were inspired, and challengers smelled blood. The European Union hit Facebook with record forfeitures under the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR. Lawgivers in the U.S. floated the idea of breaking up the company entirely. Mark responded the only way he knew, by learning. He spent hours with policy experts and academics, reading reports on digital ethics, republic, and media ecosystems. He was then happy to apologize. He wanted to understand. Intimately, he admitted that he'd undervalued how important the company had come. Facebook had grown briskly than anyone could control. But rebuilding trust needed further than soul-searching. Mark demanded a new system to balance power inside Facebook itself. That led to one of his boldest inventions, the creation of the Oversight Board in 2019. It was, in substance, a Supreme Court for content temperance, an independent body made up of scholars, intelligencers, and mortal rights experts. Its rulings would be binding, indeed, over Zuckerberg's own opinions. It was his attempt to fit Republic into a digital conglomerate. Critics called it a PR trick. Sympathizers saw it as genuine reform. Either way, it marked a rare moment where a tech CEO freely limited his own control. Still, the culture inside Facebook had to evolve. Times of growth had created silos, collapse, and bureaucracy. The company that formerly thrived on speed now felt like it was walking through wet cement. Mark began a quiet metamorphosis, reorganizing leadership, leveling scales, and emphasizing ethics as much as invention. He pushed for a sequestration-first redesign, incorporating Messenger, WhatsApp, and Instagram Direct under a single translated frame. The thing was to make private communication the core of Meta's future. "People want to talk freely, not perform intimately," he told his platoon. It was a philosophical pivot from openness to closeness. Meanwhile, Facebook's critics didn't yield. Whistleblowers blurted documents showing the company's internal exploration on internal health impacts, polarization, and algorithmic bias. Every disclosure reignited debate. Was Zuckerberg eyeless to detriment, or was he calculating it into his business model? The verity was more complicated. He saw the damage, but he also saw the billions of connections that brought families, musketeers, and communities closer. To him, Facebook wasn't a villain, it was a glass. Humanity's excrescences reflected back at scale. But glasses have power, and he knew it. Behind the public defenses, Mark began talking further openly with his inner circle about the company's moral limits. Could technology be neutral? Should it be? Those questions visited him. They pushed him to suppose beyond growth criteria to ask what kind of civilization his creation was erecting. By 2020, his tone had changed. Gone was a recalcitrant author who dismissed critics. In his place stood a reflective leader, realistic but still idealistic. "However, we shouldn't make it at each," he told a gathering of global workers. "If we say and make technology that helps Republic," the epidemic that followed tested that conviction. Facebook came a lifeline for billions locked at home, but also a parentage ground for conspiracy propositions. Mark ordered aggressive fact checking juggernauts and partnered with the World Health Organization to fight misinformation. Yet, indeed also, he couldn't escape blame. When verity itself becomes contested, every algorithm looks political. By 2021, Mark Zuckerberg understood commodity. He no way could have seen back at Harvard Power is ain't just about erecting, it's about bearing. Every line of law he'd written, every product decision made in Facebook's history, had grown into a web of influence too vast for any one person to steer fairly. The platform was in a company presently. It was a global organism, alive, reactive, and unpredictable. And everyone wanted a piece of it. The United States, the European Union, India, Australia, each rolled out new digital regulation fabrics aimed exactly at Facebook. Logger was indicted at a monopolistic jest, artistic manipulation, and neglecting public safety. Directors were subpoenaed. Suits multiplied. Indeed, longtime abettors in Silicon Valley began distancing themselves. For Mark, it wasn't just politics, it was particular. He saw regulation as ineluctable, perhaps indeed necessary, but begrudged the cynicism behind it. "We've come the villain in everyone's story," he told his leadership platoon. "Indeed, though everyone still uses what we make." He wasn't wrong. Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp remained deeply bedded in diurnal life. Billions depended on them for communication, business, indeed identity. That contradiction, resentment, and reliance came a defining incongruity of Zuckerberg's period. The antitrust suits were the most aggressive yet. Controllers argued that Facebook's accessions of Instagram, 2012, and WhatsApp, 2014, were anti-competitive, designed to crush invention. They sought to break up Meta, separating the platforms that had come central to the company's conglomerate. Mark fought back with data and history. "We bought them because they were great," he told journalists. And we made them better. Intimately, however, he knew how fragile that conglomerate really was. Competition was shifting to new terrain, short-form videotape, decentralized networks, and artificial intelligence. Meta was massive, yes, but not insurmountable. The energy that formerly fueled Facebook's early growth was being siphoned by TikTok's narcotic algorithm and YouTube's global reach. So he rotated again. Regulation had made dominance dangerous. Rigidity was the only safe power left. In 2022, as governments tensed oversight, Meta doubled down on translucency. It published daily integrity reports, revealing how numerous detest posts, misinformation juggernauts, and fake accounts it removed. It launched public data tools for experimenters and independent trolls. These moves didn't silence critics, but they showed commodity new modesty. Mark was learning to attend with oversight, rather defying it. "We say and hide behind. We're just a platform presently," he told workers during an internal each hands. "We're a party in society, and that means responsibility is part of the job." But the pressure no way let up. The internal health extremity among teenagers, especially linked to Instagram, came the coming front in the war. Reports claimed the platform worsened body image and anxiety among youthful druggies. Zuckerberg, visibly shaken in interviews, promised reforms, more maternal controls, algorithmic adaptations, and translucency around internal exploration. He was then dodging presently. He was evolving. He'd begun to accept that technology's social impact couldn't be fixed, only managed. Every new point came with unintended consequences. Every attempt to connect people risked dividing them too. By 2023, that acceptance turned into commodity-like clarity. Meta could no longer define connection through likes, shares, or followers. Connection had to mean commodity deeper. Trust, safety, genuine community. He began still reshaping Meta's product around those principles: more private groups, smaller public criteria, and a gradational retreat from the performative side of social media that had dominated the 2010s. Outside the boardrooms, Mark himself was changing too. The brash certainty of his 20s had faded. He was now a father in his late 30s, balancing vision with literalism. He talked lower about changing the world and further about understanding it. The modesty was enforced. It came from experience. He'd seen what unbounded scale could do. In 2024, as AI began reshaping every assiduity, Mark saw a chance to rebuild Facebook's character from the ground up. He dislocated Meta as an AI-first company, releasing open-source models that battle those of challengers like Google and OpenAI. Unlike Ahead, this move was not about dominance, it was about collaboration. However, he said at Inventor Peak, it should be erected by everyone. If AI is going to shape the coming century, that line reverberated. It sounded less like strategy, more like gospel. The followership saluted, but Mark slightly smiled. He'd learned to measure success not in applause, but in abidance. By now, he'd lived through every phase of authentic creation: subjection, extremity, reflection. His relationship with his company had come nearly spiritual, a constant act of rebuilding commodity that could no way be finished. At home, he stayed predicated. Priscilla kept him tethered to the real world. Family feasts, kitty's bedtime, bike rides through Palo Alto. In quiet moments, he read ancient gospel and ultramodern wisdom with equal curiosity. The pressure between connection and control still visited him, but it also kept him moving. The story of Zuckerberg's latterly times is and about triumph. It's about abidance under scrutiny. He didn't escape the machine he erected. He learned to steer it with steadier hands. He accepted that leadership, at the scale, meant being Ms. New. By the end of 2024, the world had stopped asking whether Facebook was good or evil. It had come commodity more complex, essential, defective, evolving. And Mark had stopped asking for remission. He was too busy trying to make sure what came next would earn the world's trust again. He frequently said to new workers, "We formally changed the world formally. Now we have to make sure we change it the right way."
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.